Welcome again to Crossing Culture. I'm Brolo Bolin, host contributor. This is CN Kroom, exegete and founder. What does that mean, the MBEX? Like, I see that and like I'm so like not educated that I don't even really know what it stands for, honestly.
This guy, Master of Biblical Exposition.
Excellent. Well, there we have it. Master of Biblical Exposition. Maybe I'll try and work that in on the next introduction and sound even more professional.
Oh, man. People like professionalism. Except for John Piper. He would like to remind his brothers that we are not professionals.
Right.
From the book, Brothers, We Are Not Professionals.
And we're charismatic Calvinists.
Probably. That too. But we're all really happy and we're having a good time.
That's right.
So,
Piper. He's good on some stuff.
He had some problems in the recent years, but I mean, his early stuff is great. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that from me being reformed, but his early stuff is stuff I love because he manages to capture a passion for God with a knowledge of God. He manages to be an expositor, a scholar, and an encourager and exhorter all at the same time. So, I think it's pretty phenomenal. I'm gonna hit this light over here just to bring in a little extra light.
Excellent. That looks great. You're looking all your melatonin goodness is just glowing.
Oh man.
I'm worried I'm gonna be all washed out.
Or something. This guy is crazy. So we just recorded a really good discussion that hopefully you've already seen from the previous this one's going to be out first, so won't have seen it. We just finished recording a previous discussion that you'll see after this one, regarding baptism and primary, secondary, tertiary doctrines. But this I wanted to bring up, and this is something I was talking about before. We're really close to an election. And I'm going to try to have, we're going to try to have this video out possibly tomorrow or today.
Hopefully we'll see, tonight, we'll but maybe tomorrow morning. I said hopefully
okay.
tonight.
And then I've got, okay. Sorry. Okay. That'll be great. Yeah. And then hopefully there should be an article up on Crossing Culture by me. It's half done. Just highlighting some of the things I want to talk about here. Just because you heard this or read the article doesn't mean not to listen or watch the other. So you make sure you check out both, and also check us out Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, crossingculture.org, pretty much everywhere except Instagram, because I hate Instagram. And I think I do have an account on Instagram, but I still hate Instagram. Other than that, yeah.
Facebook,
and then the Patreon,
I loved. Instagram, I hated. I said Facebook, I loved.
You love Instagram?
Facebook, I loved. Instagram,
yes,
I hated.
That's how I feel. That's exactly how I feel. Like, it is. Instagram is the Esau of social media to me. It's like, oof. But, and it makes sense because, it's owned by Facebook. So it makes sense that I would choose one over the other. But
right.
That, I guess it's super relevant, actually. But nevertheless, I wanted to bring this up because, for Christians, the choice of who to vote for has been something of consternation. Brolo and I, we have alerts from Google that show up with articles going on with Christianity and different things. And every now and then we come across some things. And a lot of what I've been seeing leading up to this, when you tag Christianity in Google alerts, is articles asking the question of how Christians can possibly vote for Donald Trump. And I'd like to contend that the argument, the election, is not about Trump or Biden primarily. And this is how you have to make the decision, because there are going to be primary, just like we were talking about with doctrine, secondary and tertiary problems or issues within every choice. And you have to decide or assign importance to each of them. And so I think that the people themselves are actually secondary, and the platforms are primary. And I'm going to read this passage just to give some context to what I'm about to say. And the article that I'm writing, which I'm going to highlight here, are really just looking at five different characteristics or attributes of each man as we're going into, and talking about some of them and trying to highlight some differences. But this passage comes from, and it should be familiar to everybody, 1 Samuel chapter 8, I'm reading out New American Standard. And it says, "And it came about when Samuel was old that he appointed his sons judges over Israel. Now the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of his second Abijah, and they were judging in Beersheba. His sons, however, did not walk in his way, but turned aside after dishonest gain and took bribes and perverted justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, 'Behold, you have grown old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations.' But the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel when they said, 'Give us a king to judge us.' And Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, 'Listen to the voice of the people in regards to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day that I brought them up from Egypt, even to this day, and that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. Now then, listen to their voice, however. You shall solemnly warn them and tell them of the procedure of the king who will reign over them.'" And then he goes on to talk about how the king will take your horses and your land and your daughters, and he'll take all those things for himself. And they were like, "That's fine. That's fine. Just give us a king." But just as way of small devotional here, introduction, when you consider the passage that's here and you look at what's happening, the judges had been ruling up until this point. God had appointed judges, you know, from what Moses was doing, essentially, where he had all these people who come together and they would decide on issues. And what I want you to take away from the passage here is the response of the people, and not the part you might be thinking, where the people come back and say, where is this here? "Behold, you have grown old," in verse 5, "and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations." There's some dark stuff in that verse. And I think that apparently we would look at it and say, wow, appoint a king for us to judge us like all the nations. The people wanted an identity similar to the surrounding nations. That's kind of a scary thought, because essentially what they were saying is, and follow this line of thinking for a second. The people around them had appointed someone, had chosen someone from their midst to rise from among them and judge them or lead them or rule them. The people were not just asking to look like the structure of the surrounding nations, but they were essentially asking God to pick someone that was like them to rule over them. I just see how significant that is and how different that is. It's not just we want to be structured like this other nation. Well, we want a king because they have a king. What they're asking for when they ask for a king, what is a king? A king is someone who rises from among the people. You would consider that that person might have the same ideology, the same process for handling problems. Someone from among their culture that understands their culture to rise up and judge them. They were asking to essentially be not just, they were asking to be let off the hook here. They were saying, we want to do what we want to do. We want to live the way we want, and we want someone who's not going to get in the way. Why is that important?
Well,
because what's happening today, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just, you kind of brought me back to Job in thinking about that I hadn't really thought about the correlation before, in that Job was talking about, where is this mediator, you know, between God and man? And it was almost like, you know what I mean? They're like, well, we don't really like how harsh God seems to be towards us, so we want somebody who's like us who'll be a little less harsh or whatever, right? I mean, is that essentially what you're...
And that's it, right? We're looking for a mediator. I mean, you know, with Job, Job is there, and he is fundamentally misunderstanding what's happening to him. So he's looking for someone to explain what's going on, take it a little easier on him. All right. Because I mean, he even gets to the point where he gets in an argument with God. I mean, this futile argument, but you know, God is gracious and patient with him in that discussion. But here, and I think that there's some similarities to what you're saying. but here, even more so, if you think about what they're doing and asking and saying, here's what we had. We had a structure of people that had to be committed to the law of God and judging us according to the law of God. Now we're saying we don't like that structure. We don't want multiples. We want one person. And essentially we're saying when we make him king, he will do what we want because we made him king. So there is this sense in which there is a transference of power. So and I just want to show you how important this is. In a Presbyterian system of government in a church, the elders of the church derive their authority from the people. The people of God are called and told to be holy and separated from evil. And so the intention is that when we pick out elders, we're saying we want the best version of us. We want what we want the best version of what we consider to be righteous virtues. And so in a church, you find the holiest among you and the most spiritual among you, and you elevate them into that position, giving them the authority of the people, investing it to them to make decisions. When you look here, they're saying we'll take the best of what we consider to be good virtues from among us and elevate him to the position of judge. And that's what America constantly wants to do. America is looking to say, who is among us, who among us carries the best of what we consider to be good virtues? When you consider the way that Amy Coney Barrett was treated during confirmation, and I don't mean by the Senate judiciary, I mean by the blue check marks on Twitter and the famous people out there, they were screaming to the high heavens about their concern for their ability to kill children. They were concerned that she was going to overturn Roe v. Wade. The nomination of a justice on the Supreme Court came down to a singular issue for both sides. Who would protect life and who would allow them to continue to snuffing out life? When a nation gets to a point where these things become a virtue, then we're only going to be concerned with elevating people who hold on to what we consider to be virtues. And that's the nature of an election. And so when we ask about who do we vote for, how do we vote, I think the person to some degree has to become secondary, because in an American culture, the character is almost a wash. Look what we continue to get in front of us. We continue to get the Donald Trumps, the Hillary Clintons, the Kamala Harrises, the Joe Bidens, the Barack Obamas. I'm talking about, these are not people who, when Ben Carson tried to run for president, when Herman Cain tried to run for president, two black men, mind you, that the left continues to say are these marginalized people in our society, two educated, scholarly black men who knew how to run a business or to run something and had an education and an intellect, they were dragged through the mud, especially Herman Cain. I mean, so what is it if that's not what we're looking for? And the right weren't enthusiastic about them either. They weren't brash enough. They weren't arrogant enough. They weren't loud enough. So our culture, as we know, is garbage. What we hold as virtuous it's just hot garbage. What we hold to be virtues are over-sexualizing youth, over-emotionalizing young adults. We tell people to consider their feelings before facts and truth. We tell people to live their own truth as if truth was a multiverse that the Flash and his friends jacked up and created multiple multiverses of truth, which is garbage in itself. And so we're left with a culture that celebrates, I don't even, subjectivity, that celebrates things that are unrighteous. When it comes to picking our president, I ask the question, since the people in our culture are garbage, then what becomes the primary point? And I think it's the platforms.
Yeah, and I was gonna kinda add on to what you're saying in that, because I've heard, like in those articles and stuff that you're talking about that we've been reading and listening to, and different arguments that come up, One thing I heard brought up is, well, I mean, the Republican Party is now pro-gay marriage, and I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I haven't heard that specifically. But
there are groups out there, conservative gays for Trump. I mean, they exist.
Right, but that's kind of the point is like, it. I mean, that's the point that I'm trying to make, and it really is that, I mean, the parties are really just reflections of the culture and how trash the culture really is. But on the one hand, like, you have the one side saying, well, like, they're this and they're that and they're this and they're that. But if you really get down to what the party platforms are and what they actually are about, and I think that is ultimately what Chris is getting into here right now. I mean, a lot of the arguments being made are just really irrelevant.
and that's exactly it. And that's kind of where my article starts with. You know, it captures these five, I guess you say, attributes of them: transparency, commitment, vision, policy, right? And then character. Was that five? Is that four? I don't even know.
I wasn't counting either. Sorry.
that sound like five, right? So, yeah, I think that's the case. Transparency, commitment to the country, vision, policy, and character, right? And character, essentially, I argue that it's a wash. Character's a wash, right? We haven't seen Trump be overtly disturbing in the last year and a half, per se. He's still a little vitriolic. He's still aggressive, but he was nothing like he was in the primaries. He was nothing like he was in year one. But they would have you believe that he's never toned it down, when in fact he has toned it down. It's just the problem that his version of toned down matches a lot of American culture. He was over the top, and now he's brought it back down to levels that match the American culture. So, you know, they can still point at it and say it's bad. But on the other side, if we're going to talk about character of the people running, Biden and Harris, you know, Harris was called out by her own parents for playing identity politics and lying on camera. So, I mean, that immediately disqualifies her for me as far as trustworthy, because it's like, if your own parents can say publicly that you are lying and playing games with the people, then there's no telling what you'll do for power. And she's power hungry. It's obvious she's power hungry. And Biden, even as much as he seems like the gentle grandfatherly person, we know he's got a sketchy past too. You know, more Hunter Biden information comes out. We know the problem with women too. So we can't just point at Trump and be like, he's got a problem with women. It's like, so does Joe. And unfortunately, part of my argument is that Joe Biden is really not much different than the casual American strolling into church on Sunday afternoon. And that might hurt some people to hear, but, you know, he's a generally kind person to those he meets. He seems warm when you hear him. He seems innocuous, you know, of no threat. And yet he's still got these open shortcomings. And so, you know, I just argue he's really no different than the typical American going into church on Sunday or to Easter or Christmas. And that doesn't make him a good person. That just means that, you know, he is average level American cultural person. I mean,
well, that's just it.
That's a bit of a wash.
Okay, hold on. Well, I mean, what you're saying is, I mean, when you've got these people that we're looking at and going like, oh, we're gonna compare. I mean, what's by what standard? I mean, is it a thing that's constantly
right? And that's the question, right? What standard? But I mean, if we just compare it to them, the problem is that when we talk about what standard, the standard's the culture, and you touched on that earlier. Right. They're a reflection of the American culture. So when we talk about who are we comparing Trump and Biden to, America. What is the average American? And when you, and that's why I brought up the Amy Coney Barrett issue earlier, because we saw that almost the singular issue that divided people was this idea of what might happen to Roe v. Wade. That is where all the liberal leftists were terrified that she was going to go in there and overturn Wade immediately. And all the right were hoping, yes, we're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. I mean, that was the singular argument on it. They had nothing to say against her character, her education. If anything, they tried to undercut her for being a mom, like, whatever. I don't get that argument, but okay. But, you know, it just says something more about the American culture that we would even try to downplay her being a mom as a bad thing, right? Like, oh, that means she's not fit for this because she's a mother of school-aged children. Like, okay, so what? Like, I mean, would I prefer her be at home and take care of her family? Yeah, but if her between her and her husband and her kids, that some of them that are almost young teenagers, you know, if they have something worked out where, you know, mom can take care of what she needs to at home and care for the home and kids, you know, to her best ability and do this, then, you know, it's 2020, I guess. So I again, like I said, I prefer her take care of her kids, but if this is the course we're going to be on, that's not a detriment to her that disqualifies her from service as far as I'm concerned. But again, we're comparing the character of the two men to the culture, and the ACB showings just prove to us that the culture is obsessed with murder and death and evil. And so I'm moving on, and I think about some of the next things, or I talk about the policy. This is where we get to what becomes a primary issue. Once we get that out of the way, these other things become the primary issue. And John MacArthur's already said, if you're a Christian, you can't vote Biden, right? Because they are the party of death. They are the party of slavery, segregation, Planned Parenthood, and abortion, and anti-God. I mean, they're anti-God, anti-gun, you know, anti-family, anti-law and order. I mean, they're the party of the antis. I mean, really, right? They're the party of destroying the establishment and rebuilding it into some image that they want to see. And the policies, both culturally, fiscally, internationally, economically, kind of ties in with financially, but I'll do it separate. They don't have any good platform to stand on. They want to just give away everything, and that's not how anything works. Whereas the other side wants to build and bring work back to America. And I think that if you are a Christian, you are looking to take care of your family by working. And if you're looking to work and have a job, you need someone who has a policy of bringing back more jobs for you to choose from. And I think right there, just in terms of choice of saying, okay, how can I best take care of my family through work? You got to pick the guy who's bringing jobs back. That seems to be a no-brainer to me. And it's also the guy that said, I saw an article this week where people were complaining about, they were crying and said, I voted for Trump and then I got thousands less back in my tax return. And it's like, well, yes, because he cut the taxes and you were getting that money back throughout the year. And it's just the general ignorance of America to not understand that when you get less back on your tax return, that means you're probably getting more back throughout the year. It's just those little things that media takes advantage of and says, see, he's doing you wrong. And a lot of the stuff could be cleared up if the media were actually doing their job, right? But I digress from the media. You know, my third point here is on policy, or not policy, sorry, on vision. The vision for America seems clear, and I don't think that there's any question about that. I mean, Galatians 6:10 talks about Christians being able to do good, especially to the household of faith, do good to all men, but especially the household of faith. And I understand that there are people that want to go out and say we need to be the saviors of the world, but it's kind of like the air mask that drops down in the plane. You know, if the plane's about to crash, you know, the oxygen thing tops down and into your hand. And what do they always tell you? Put your mask on before you try to help somebody else. And it's the same idea that's in Matthew 18, wanting to be able to take the log out of your own eye and having to deal with that. So just thinking about the idea of Galatians 6:10 talking about Christians being able to do good unto all possible, I know many people want to look at what goes on with foreign policy and think that we need to go and help everyone that we can. But again, like I said, it's just like the planes where the oxygen mask falls down. They tell you to make sure that you take care of yourself before you help other passengers, because, you know, you're useless to other passengers if you can't breathe. And that's the vision that Donald Trump understands about America. We need to put America first, make sure that our house is in order. And now some people will disagree with that, but I mean, even God tells the church, he says that first, he says you need to take the log out of your own eye, the beam out of your own eye before you can judge your brother. But it also tells us that judgment will begin first in the house of God. So I mean, even God has this kind of, you know, get your own house in order before you go out doing other stuff, kind of principles throughout the Bible. And I think that it's right for America to look and say, are we in good health? If we're in good health and we can take care of our own people, then we can go out and see what we can do for others. But until we've got folks who have been perpetually and chronologically, not chronologically, but generationally poor, you know, in our nations and our veterans, you know, until we get those people situated where they can work and they can be prosperous and they can find themselves with value, adding value back to society, but also having a sense of self-worth by doing those jobs and tasks, then we can go back out and help. But the problem is that for too long in America, there's been this globalist structure being built where we have not taken care of America, but we have divested America of a lot of its funds. And, you know, on a small scale, you see that in Democratic states, right? Because they've been begging for these bailouts, trying to rebudget their deficit because they've been stealing from Peter to pay Paul, you know, taking from pension money to do pet projects, trying to please people that keep them in power. And New York is a great example of that because New York City gets the benefits of almost all of New York's tax money, even though the rest of us pay it. And all you have to do is benefit those people and they'll vote you in and stay in power. But the rest of New York is red. I mean, it would be a more of a 50-50 toss-up or at least a 55-45 situation if we took out that one big blue part of New York City. And a lot of states, major states are like that. They have cities that are so humongous that they dominate the demographic. I mean, Los Angeles, you know, in California. I mean, Houston in Texas, you know, almost big enough to sway the demographic. It's not going to vote blue in this election, but they're more blue than they've ever been because of that one big liberal city. And when you consider that as a vision, the Biden administration wants to look at that and simply say, yeah, how can we divest ourselves to take care of everyone else? But what you're doing is actually you're causing economic harm and sickness to America. And we've had presidents, Democratic and Republican, who have been on that globalism scale. George Bush was no different. Barack Obama was no different. You know, we haven't had someone really, really focus on America since Reagan. And when you think about Reagan, right, his re-election campaign was humongous. He won almost the whole country in the electorate because of that popularity.
Well, I was going to say in kind of tandem with what you're saying is that you have, I think, a portion of the population that is kind of that red-leaning portion that wants to that think that this country's messed up and think that we need to do something different. We're gonna redo socialism and we're gonna do it better than it's ever been done. We're gonna do it like one of those poster child, you know, countries or nations, yep, or areas where they've done it right, and we're gonna show
blue,
them how it's
the blue,
done.
The blue though, right?
Oh, sorry. Did I say red? I meant blue. Yeah, yep. Sorry. Blue leaning.
Yeah.
Democratic, yeah, liberal. And I think the problem that we're getting at is with that globalization idea is that as an American, you see the idea behind having states' rights, behind having the different
federalist system.
And that's what causes the world to work in a sense. I mean, when you go to that globalist thing, we're building back towards the Tower of Babel.
That's it.
I mean, it didn't work. It's not going to work. And there's no reinventing the wheel to make that work again.
No.
And the people that want that are part of a system that is a worldly system, that is a demonic system that wants to, you know, I mean, the reason,
and I know what you're saying, right? Because that's exactly what it is. We look at, and people will encounter point to that. They'll look at like Acts 2 and talk about how, oh, the church gave to everyone as they had need. But for them to do that, some people had to have more than others. For that hospitality, for that care to work, someone had to have more than others. And they're not saying that they gave away everything they had so that everyone was equal. It said that they gave to all so that no one was lacking. There's a significant difference in that statement of making all equal or making sure that no one lacks. That's the difference between saying, here, I've got 100 and I'll give you 25, you 25, and you 25, and now I have 25 and we all are equal, as opposed to saying, I've got 100, you guys have zero, I'll give you 15, I'll give you 15, I'll give you 15. It's the difference between making everyone basically impoverished or making sure that people don't go without basic necessities. And there's a difference. And then people say, well, oh, in America, we don't do that. It's like, exactly. And that's why people voted for Trump, because they watched Democrats and Republicans not take care of Americans equally on both sides for different reasons. That is why, you know, every now and then Trump gets in a fight with one of these establishment Republicans, you know, whether it's McConnell or whoever it is, because they're not taking care of their own people. I mean, if you look at McConnell and Pelosi argue over another stimulus package, they say, oh, the Republicans think we've done enough. And it's like, so you guys in government paid yourselves, kept yourselves going, took a long vacation, and then had other people go back to work, and some people not go back to work to the same amount of time, and you gave them $1,200 for 6 months. You've taxed us more than that in that time. So people look at that and go, neither one of these sides want to help America, whereas Trump's going, go big. It's all coming back to America anyway, because he understands he's placing the jobs back here. He's putting people back to work. So when you consider the vision for America, Biden's vision is garbage, because it's the globalist, you know, socialist thing that doesn't work, hasn't worked, never will work, can't work. And yet they've convinced youth that, oh, no one's tried it before. No one's tried to do it right. Like, okay, yeah, we tried to do it before. And every country that's tried it, there are a reason that Venezuelans and people from Cuba and folks that have immigrated here from those countries, there is a reason they vote red. There is a reason that there are a bunch of Cuban Hispanic Americans down in Florida that are rallying behind Trump right now, because they left countries with the exact system people here are talking about putting in place, and they don't want to be eating dogs and going back to poverty. They've seen it firsthand, and they've come here and built businesses and pulled themselves up out of the dirt and made something of themselves, found self-worth in the work that they do, and contributed to society and creating a product and a brand, and they don't want to go back to that, despite the fact that there are people now who are saying, oh, we've just never tried it. And they're like, no, we've seen it tried. It doesn't work, and we don't want it. And so they're voting for not even the character of a man. They're not even concerned about the character of a man. They are voting because they don't want to go back to a vision of a country that could leave them so impoverished they're eating animals to survive. And that's the major difference. That's why, you know, they say, oh, Christians sold out, they should be voting for Biden. How can they vote for a man who's like that? Because he doesn't want us to be socialists. That is why. It's like, he does not want to kill babies. It's like, he does not want us to stop going to church and shut down churches. He does not want to take people's guns. He does not want to take people's free speech. And that is why. And the other side wants to do all of those things. So when we come along and we say, well, how can Christians vote for a guy like Trump? Because his platform, the man may not be righteous, but I'm not picking him for pastor. I'm picking him for his business acumen and his vision of what the country should be. And if he protects the Constitution that is built off of principles from the Bible, that is something Christians should be able to get on board with.
Amen.
You know,
I don't know if that's an amen, but it's a yes, sir.
What's that?
I said, I don't know if that's an amen, but yeah, that's a yes, sir. I mean, absolutely.
I mean, like, truly, truly, verily, verily, right? That's all it is. And, you know, and my other points here are, and I won't take as long belabor the rest of them, but commitment. And commitment really goes back to vision. It's, you know, how do we define commitment? Well, the Oxford Dictionary calls it a state or quality of being dedicated to a cause or an activity. So we ask, who's dedicated to the cause and activity of America? Well, for the same reasons, vision, it's Trump again, right? It's someone who wants to bring back jobs. It's someone who doesn't want to globalize. It's someone who respects the Constitution. It's someone who is for free speech, for life, for gun ownership, for you know, freedom, just general freedom to live your lives the way that you want to do so without bringing harm to anyone else. And the other side, all we see from them is abortion, gay rights, you know, all these other things. And I think that there are even some libertarians or center right folks who aren't even as upset about the gay marriage as they are about just transgenderism and pedophilia and all this other stuff that's happening. You know, they're less concerned with that than they are the outgrowth of those things, which, again, transgenderism, pedophilia, stuff like that. They're very concerned about those things. So there are some folks that, like I said, even center right, that that don't care about gay marriage, but have a bone to pick with them because of the outworkings of that particular position. So we find some people who, and even maybe even center left, some folks who who might stand near us on those issues. The other item being transparency. And I mean, if we don't know who wins the argument on transparency, we haven't been watching. Joe Biden's been in his basement for months and months and months, and Trump can't shut up. And if you're going to argue that Trump is a narcissist who can't turn off his Twitter, then there's some transparency there, right? He literally is just every day telling you what he thinks, whether he should be saying it out loud or not. You know, he's just saying what he thinks.
And when we say basement, because apparently we have to clarify these things, because there's people when, like, I don't know, the president says coyote or something, they think that he's talking about a literal animal that roams. Yeah. So when we say like basement,
the NHL Phoenix Coyotes, are bringing people across the border or something.
Yeah, yeah. So when we say basement, we mean that he is literally like shut off, not talking to anyone. Like he is
calling a lid.
Yeah, he's doing literally what Hillary did. Like she couldn't be bothered to talk to anyone. And Trump, for better or for worse, made himself completely available to the media. And I think the benefit of that is that, yeah, we do get a lot of garbage in that, but if we're watching any of us in everything we say every day, you're going to get a sense of who that person is. And granted, like, he's not a perfect man, and we're not making an argument that he is, but he is
not even making an argument that he's that great or good.
Yeah, but he is who he is, and we can pretty confidently say that he intends to do what he says he's doing. And he shows that he does what he says he's going to do, and he does it through action and
follows through.
Yeah, yeah. And his, you know, a lot of what he says is it's kind of silly, and I think he's kind of poking the bear in some ways, and he could probably stand to learn
have a little less.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, but that's the thing, right? So, and I'll make this kind of like my final point. All in all, come Tuesday, you know, there are a lot of people trying to paint him as racist, or, you know, rightly paint him as, you know, someone who says not great things all the time. But you've got to decipher out stupid things that he says hyperbolically from actual stupid things. So, you know, because the media has this vested interest in making sure that everything he says is seen in a negative light. And because he speaks in hyperbole and doesn't always filter things first, he gives them ample opportunity almost with everything he says, right? He says so many things that can be construed in any way because he is not solid and concrete and accurate with his thought and his speech. And so you can take things he says and make them sound like, oh, there were fine people on both sides, even though a paragraph later, you know, he goes on to define that. He doesn't do that initially, right? So you get sound bites out of him all the time, and he can't keep his mouth shut. But nevertheless, the question that's going to come down for us as Christians is, you know, or even before that, when people talk about him as racist, I point out to you that first, this man has been in the spotlight for 40 years, and we've known who he is for all 40 years. He has been on the cover of Playboy. He has been in magazines everywhere. He's been the idol of rap songs throughout the 80s and 90s. He's had his own reality television show. This guy has been in the public eye forever. So for someone to just make the argument that in 2016 he became a racist is ludicrous. And it betrays your intelligence to even consider it, because this man's been around so long. How many rappers have written songs about wanting to be like Trump? Because he's rich and got a bunch of money and got schemes and whatever, and women and whatever. He's been the darling of 80s and 90s rap songs. If you want to talk about pop culture, the guy's in the World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Fame. So, I mean, you know, he's a part of pop culture. We know who he is. What's that?
Oh, I didn't even know that about the World Wrestling Hall of Fame. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame, but he's in their version of the Hall of Fame, right? Because he's been at WrestleMania. He's been on the screen. Oh, gotcha. He's friends with Vince McMahon, who owns the company. Gotcha. So, I mean, this guy is a pop culture icon. And to think and to say that, in 2016, he became a racist is really the height of ignorance and it belies your own intelligence because you've seen this man for so long. But what they've managed to do is that every single day they inundate you with stories about him being a racist, and now you start to believe it because you hear it every single day, every single hour. Go to CNN sometime and just look at the headlines on their front page, and then go to Fox News and look at the headlines on their front page, and then go to the Epic Times and look at the front of their page. Go and compare these news sources and see what the liberal media is talking about all the time. Every story is Trump somehow, some way. They are constantly inundating. And then you go to left-wing media, you know, Facebook and terrorist Twitter, and you see on there that they sway the media in such a way to try and paint Trump negatively as well. Constantly. That's all you're inundated with. If you don't search the news for hours for yourself, if you're not getting alerts on certain things, you don't find anything good about the man. So when you've been conditioned to hate someone that much, you start to actually hate him. And it doesn't matter if it, what they're saying is right or wrong. You simply dislike the man because you've been constantly fed information that you're supposed to dislike him. So when Tuesday comes, you know, Christians, don't vote for the person. Vote for your values. Vote for what you want this country to look like. Because the next 4 years could be very interesting if Democrats become in control of all three sectors of the government, and Amy Coney Barrett's nomination and appointment to the Senate, to the judiciary, becomes even more important if they get all three. Now, as it stands right now, I'm expecting Trump to win in a landslide. I'm expecting him to have over 320 electoral votes at this point. He's I believe, as of today, as of this recording, up in Florida, up in Ohio, up in North Carolina, up in Arizona, up in Iowa. And he is in almost a dead heat in Pennsylvania. And he is actually within striking distance in Minnesota, who hasn't voted red since 1972, Nixon's election. He is in striking distance of Michigan and Wisconsin right now. There is a very good chance that even the Supreme Court extensions in, I believe, Pennsylvania and either Michigan or Wisconsin, one of those states, they may not play a factor. This might be over very, very quickly on election day. I'm not, my prediction right now is Trump over 320, and I don't think Biden cracks 200. And also the Senate races are very interesting at this point too, because while Arizona is down, Joni Ernst is ahead in Iowa. John James is running a fantastic Senate race in Michigan. He's within 1 point of his opponent. And Mitch McConnell looks like he's going to remain the senator from Kentucky. So things are looking like a red wave, despite the fact that you continue to see national polls with Trump down 8 points. You have to understand that the national polls are only first of all, they only need to be within a certain percentage to be considered accurate. So 4 or 5%, a 3 or 4% margin of error still can make them accurate. But I've seen statisticians out there saying if Trump gets within 4 or 5 points in the national vote, he has an 88% chance of winning the electorate. So you got to understand right now, him even nationally being within 6-7, and a Rasmussen poll was out a couple of days ago that had him up 1 point. And even as of today, Rasmussen's poll has him down 3 points to Biden, 49-46. So right now what we're looking at is the reelection of Donald Trump. And there's a very good chance that we may actually lose a Senate seat, but take one from a typically Democratic stronghold in Michigan, which would be a very interesting turn of events. But I would like to see them take the lot, because I frankly want the message sent home so strongly that America opposes this garbage. I want to see Trump win 330 plus electorate votes. And I think the thing that, if you want to know where the country is heading, I think what you're going to want to look at is not just how many he won, but how many blue states became less blue. That's going to be really important. Does Washington become less blue? Does New York fade in its blueness? Are states that are Democratic strongholds become a little less blue because people are sick of the, I mean, they're not going to win New York or California. Although every now and then I just think in my head, New York could be a surprise, but I'm not that crazy to bet money on it. But I do think that you're going to see relatively longstanding, dark, dark, deep blue states become a little less blue. And that may push the left into a position where they have to abandon this radicalness. because and I think Trump's going to win handily Minnesota and Arizona and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania's going to be close, but he may not need Pennsylvania if he picks up the Rust Belt. If he picks up Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Arizona, he may not even need Pennsylvania, but I still think he'll probably take it. But the interesting thing, Pennsylvania, Minnesota's the state to watch. Biden killed himself at that last debate, saying he was going to destroy oil. He wrecked his chances in Texas and in Pennsylvania. Trump's up in Texas. But Minnesota's going to tell an interesting story. Are people tired, and do they recognize the fact that their government left them hanging while their city burned? Do they recognize that Trump tried to come in and he was turned away by Democratic leadership? Are they going to recognize that their governor was out in the, and their mayor was out in the streets with the protesters who were burning down crap, trying to participate with them only to be shunned by them? How informed is Minnesota is going to tell you how informed the rest of the country is. But I think Tuesday is going to be a red wave, but check out Minnesota and watch those blue states to see if they become less blue. Other than that, you know, I don't want to disregard the fact that Trump's not a perfect human being. He's not necessarily even a great human being in many ways. I see he's got his faith coalition up there and Paula White, the heretic, as his spiritual advisor. You know, do I think Trump's a Christian? Not particularly. But, you know, again, I don't know him personally. All I can do is judge him by what I see on the outside. And I don't particularly think anything in his speech or character designates him as one. If anything, the 40 years that we've known him would suggest that he'd have to make a miraculous turn. I mean, I would have to see some Kanye West like activity out of him to consider that. But when we're talking about voting for a leader, we got to ask ourselves, who do we want to be as a country? Do we want to act like Israel and saying, give us a king that looks like us to judge us? Do we want to be judged by our own standards? Or do we want to be judged by some better standards? And I think that is what Trump represents. He represents a discontentment with the establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats. Yep. He represents a disheartenedness, a quiet disheartenedness in the American people with politicians who only seem to be interested in themselves and not the people. He literally stands as the highlight in this argument between Pelosi and McConnell. These two old school politicians who have been in it so long that when they retire, they're going to be making retirement annual payments, you know, in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, while, you know, you and I are going to retire and get a couple $100 a month. You know, they're going to be living quite well on their pension as American public servants because they've been there too long. What Trump represents is doesn't have to be about his character, but about the character of America going forward. Are we truly, truly tired of these establishment politicians who use the Constitution when it's comparable for them, when it works for them, when it's in their favor, and dismisses it when it's not? Or are we going to say, I'm sick of these people. I want my Constitution back. I want the country back. And I think if we see that, then Christian, if we see red, if we paint the town red on Tuesday, I think that's a signal to you that you need to make sure that you are evangelizing even more, that you are living your life even more as a Christian, that you're praying even harder, because there may be opportunity for us to go back into the world and recapture the academy, potentially recapture the entertainment industry, recapture the arts. There's an opportunity there for us if we see this red wave. Now, there's always going to be an opportunity in theory, right? Because that's what we're to do. But what I'm saying is there may be an opportunity where America is ready by God's grace to hear that message again and hear it thundered again from the streets. So street preachers, get ready. It's like pastors, get ready. We're hoping that ultimately we see as a church that people are saying, okay, we don't like where we're headed. We don't like the rhetoric. We don't like people on both sides of the aisle sitting around getting paid, fat catting, wasting our money and not being worried about the people. And also that we don't like these extreme liberal left ideologies that are coming out of the woodworks, trying to destroy the family, trying to destroy gender, trying to destroy marriage, trying to destroy the educational institutions because they don't like our history. That's an opportunity for us to say, okay, Now, as a church, how do we respond? Because the way that we've been responding isn't going to work either. Our old status quo, hellfire and brimstone is not going to be the answer either. We're going to need actual answers about how the estate of the human heart and how God comes and fixes that through the Holy Spirit and what this world should look like in light of the scripture. So we're going to have to be articulate in understanding our faith. We're going to have to be like Paul, who can go out there at the Areopagus and see that there is this false god that's been worshipped, this unknown god, I should say, that's been worshipped, and we're going to have to introduce people to him again. So vote red.
Amen. Vote red. Once again, thanks for listening. This has been Crossing Culture. You can connect with us via Facebook, not on Instagram. We're not all about that, apparently. I don't really care about it anymore either, so who cares?
See? This is meant to be.
We got Rumble. We're on Rumble, YouTube.
Rumble, crossingculture.org, always the website. And website. Hit us up on the Patreon. Listen, you got an extra buck, an extra $2, an extra $5. Listen, this we do this on our spare time, it would help us build something a little bit, and just even to show it as a tip, your appreciation, whatever. If you don't, then just come back and keep watching. But subscribe, like, share, do those things for us. Those are free.
Yes, please.
And we like those too. We like feedback. We like knowing people are interacting with it. Our last video did pretty well for us, man. And I forgot to mention to you that I saw on the Anchor, we got 18 countries listening in.
Wow, that's cool.
So that's pretty significant, man. Yeah, and our viewership went up quite a bit from the last episode too. So looks like that one actually did some pretty good work for us. So we're hoping that folks will jump in and enjoy this one just as much. Until then, guys, grace and peace.
Grace and peace.